Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Chris Anderson joins us now. In November, he quit his job as the editor of Wired to go work full-time at the tech company he started called 3D Robotics, which makes personal, non-lethal, unmanned aircraft, drones, but not the deadly ones. He recently wrote an op-ed in the New York Times explaining why he stopped manufacturing them in China and set up shop in Tijuana, Mexico. He's here to explain that and to talk more broadly about it. Chris Anderson, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Thanks. Hi. Great to be here.
So Mexico's the new China? I thought Mexico's the old China.
Things changed. We're 20 years after NAFTA, and Mexico has learned a lot in the last 20 years. And now, as China has become such a global powerhouse in engineering and manufacturing, et cetera, but also, we're learning more about the time delays and political risks and environmental costs of those 9,000-mile supply chains. Mexico has become competitive again.
And Chris's book, which I neglected to mention on some related themes, is Makers, the New Industrial Revolution. You're not just talking about low-skilled, cheap labor, to be clear. You're talking about highly skilled engineering and manufacturing capacity. And so those things can now be found in Mexico?
Yeah, so I was just down there yesterday, actually. So, for example, all the big electronics companies, Samsung, Sony, Foxconn, Sharp, Panasonic, et cetera, they're all down there. And if you look at something like 80% of the flat-screen TVs sold in America today are made in Tijuana. And if you look at the plants, these are, I think Samsung has more than 500,000 square feet. It's basically a small village, maybe even a large village, actually. It's just miles of these massive electronics plants that are making basically everything except for the semiconductors, the chips themselves.
So what kinds of drones are you building?
Well, we make drones that are sort of about 4 pounds or under. They mostly what's called multi-copters. So they're like sort of basically like helicopters, but with 4 or 6 blades, and also airplanes. But they're what differentiates drones from like model airplanes is that these are autonomous. They fly themselves. So you give them GPS waypoints and missions, and they go off and they do their things and take pictures and crop surveys and things like that. But there's about 35,000 of them out there already, which is, by point of contrast, the U.S. military only has 7,000 drones. So there's a lot more amateur drones out there than there are military ones.
So to be extremely clear, we're not talking about personal weaponized drones, obviously. We're talking about unmanned aircraft that take photos and videos. Who's your target consumer?
They're everybody. I mean, our favorite consumer is basically what we call the GoPro crowd. So, the GoPro cameras, these fantastically, tough and beautiful image cameras that you see for, a lot of sports videos. YouTube is full of them. One of the main functions for drones is putting a GoPro in the air, just giving the camera wings so you can get these kind of, fantastic overhead views. And so, for example, people can, like windsurfers, can program a drone to just follow them as they do stunts through the water and keeping the camera trained on them the whole time. And then when the battery gets low, the thing just flies itself back to the shore.
Listeners, any comments or questions for Chris Anderson about the personal drones that he's manufacturing or labor in Mexico versus China versus the United States? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Maybe you saw his op-ed in the Times. Maybe you know his book, Makers, The New Industrial Revolution. We're going to get into 3D printers a little bit, which President Obama mentioned in the State of the Union address, 212-433-9692. But I want to get back first to your manufacturing in Tijuana, which, for our East Coast listeners, is the city just across the border from San Diego, in case you didn't know. And your reason is not just cheap labor. It's what you call quick sourcing. So what is that, and why is that better than the alternatives?
Yeah, well, let me start by saying we began in China, as everybody does. And, I used to live in China, and that experience in the Hong Kong-Shenzhen border was mind-blowing. I mean, it really is, the industrial engine of the world. And so one typically, especially for things that involve electronics, as ours do, one typically goes there. There's a couple consequences. There's sort of three bad things that happen when you go to China, in addition to all the good things. The first is that it takes a long time. That you have to, you know, negotiate at a distance with people who aren't, you know, your employees, and there can be confusion. Just getting design files and getting the orders done, you can see, you know, months go by. The second thing is that you have to order in big batches to get good pricing, and so you end up with all your cash kind of going out to pay for these big batches of products. And then you just wait till they come back, and only after you can sell them can you make the money back. So you end up sort of a lot of your money tied up in the supply chain. But the third, and I think this is the worst problem for us, is that because you're ordering in big batches from far away, you're discouraged from changing, from innovating. So let's say you want to change the design. Well, you can't do that because you haven't sold all 10,000 of the previous one that you designed. And so you're really sort of your entire kind of innovation engine slows down while you're waiting for these big batches to sell out. And the alternative to that is what we call just-in-time manufacturing. If you own your own factory, or at least have one very close, you can do smaller batches, you can do 24-hour turnarounds, and you can innovate every day if you want to, which gives you which is sort of much better aligned with the web's, you know, high-speed innovation model than the more sort of one-size-fits-all mass production model of the old factory way.
Let's take a phone call. Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to ask your guest two questions. One is, versus whether his Mexican production facilities are unionized, and if not, does he take steps to ensure that workers' right to form a union without retaliation is respected?
They're not unionized. Unions are not very common in Mexico, and there's been no effort to do that. We do, however, take in particular worker health and safety really seriously. So we just put in place this kind of, you know, massive effort to go above and beyond the national standards. But unions are not the norm in Tijuana.
Tom in Park Slope, you're on WNYC with Chris Anderson. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks. I'd just like to know how close to New York City would you allow these so-called harmless drones? In other words, we know that everyone keeps stressing that they're harmless, but we know how from 9/11 how flying objects can be weapons, or even accidents can happen. I wouldn't want one crashing into my apartment house or hitting my windshield when I'm driving.
Well, could a hacker hijack an unweaponized drone and turn it into a weapon, Chris?
Well, I mean, you can probably, you know, you've had radio control airplanes for 50 years, and so these are basically the same as that. They operate under the same FAA rules, which is they have to stay under 400 feet, they have to stay within visual line of sight, away from built-up areas, including New York City, and away from airports and such. Now, of course, anybody wants to break the law, could do so, and has been able to do so really since the 1950s. So from that perspective, there's really nothing new there. Ours are simply planes with brains. They're designed to fly by themselves, but they're not. But the aircraft themselves are just the standard toys. Basically, they look like toys that you can buy in the in the shopping mall. There are many amateur UAV or unmanned aerial vehicle or drone users in New York City. They operate typically on special fields with special restrictions. They stay within that 400-foot guidelines and line of sight guidelines. And the community is actually really hardcore about enforcing that. But again, I want to emphasize that these, by and large, they're typically the airplanes are made out of foam, weigh about 2 pounds. They wouldn't even crack a window if they hit it.
About the Tijuana, Mexico, and San Diego, California border, you're right that it feels less like a giant wall separating the developed and developing worlds, and more like the notional borders of the European Union. But wouldn't the people living in the slums of Tijuana, who are definitely not allowed to cross into the States, disagree with you?
Well, first of all, I mean, they are allowed, and that border is crowded every day going back and forth. What you find is that by and large, our workers are we have factory workers and we have engineers. And they choose to live often in Tijuana because the healthcare and the schools are better there than San Diego, ironically enough. Some of them do choose to live in the United States. They cross the border. We have operations.
Well, some, you say they're allowed to cross. I mean, some are allowed to cross, but, people die to get across that border.
I true, but you know, if you have a passport, you can cross the border. It's the busiest border in the world. People cross every day. The reason that we typically don't, that we do have a factory there, is, and why so many of our workers choose to live there, is that the border is quite slow. Crossing this way can take up to 2 hours, and so there's a strong emphasis for tech companies to actually move their operations to Tijuana, just simply to make life easier for those workers who otherwise would have to, you know, deal with that border crossing every day.
Why not hire American engineers and locate in San Diego or Silicon Valley?
We do. We have a big operation in San Diego and one in Silicon Valley, and we have American engineers in both. The problem is we can't find American engineers, at least as many as we want. As you know, we have a really strange talent problem in the United States, where we have a real shortage of talent at the high end and a glut of talent or people at the low end. So Mexico graduates more engineers than the United States, and we just find, if you know, hiring engineers as fast as we want. For example, we're hiring electrical engineers right now. We can't find electrical engineers who can do what we need in San Diego. Only in Mexico can we find them.
That is incredible that the nation of Mexico actually turns out more engineers, and I think your piece said three times more engineers, than the entire United States.
It's three times more per capita, but it is more in absolute.
Three times the rate.
Yeah.
Herb in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Chris Anderson. Hello.
Oh, hello. I was wondering if you drew, if there's a market for private spying on untrustworthy spouses and employees. And also, I would like you to, when your host thanks you for coming on the show, that you simply say you're welcome.
You can say anything you want when I thank you for coming on the show at the end of the segment, Chris. But what about his, those kinds of personal uses for drones?
So drones are just another instance of cameras. We see cameras everywhere. There's been a spread of cameras around, you know, through camera phones and webcams and traffic cams, etc. And drones are just taking cameras to the skies. The uses of cameras are the same as the uses for cameras for everywhere else, which is to say everything and anything. Ours is an open source project. Allow anybody to basically, it's on the internet. You can download it for free. So we don't control how it's used. What we do is, most people use it for things like agriculture science, wildlife conservation, things like that. But yes, I'm sure people could use it for spying on people. I actually don't know of any instances of anyone in our community doing that, but they certainly could, and we couldn't stop them. But that's true, of course, for computers or any other general purpose technology. What we look for is the law enforcement and the laws of the land to regulate and stop that use. Typically in America, what we do is we regulate the use of a technology, not the technology itself. So if spying and privacy invasion is against the law, then that should be prosecuted, you know, to the full extent of the law. But it's very difficult to regulate the technology just because somebody might possibly use it for ill.
Chris Anderson, former editor of Wired magazine, with us. He started a tech company called 3D Robotics. He's talking about the non-lethal, unweaponized drones that they manufacture. Maybe you saw his op-ed in the New York Times about this. He's also the author of the book, Makers, The New Industrial Revolution. I want to ask you about one other thing, and that is 3D printing. Here is President Obama from the State of the Union the other night.
Last year, we created our first Manufacturing Innovation Institute in Youngstown, Ohio. A once-shuttered warehouse is now a state-of-the-art lab where new workers are mastering the 3D printing that has the potential to revolutionize the way we make almost everything.
So every politician, it seems, just discovered 3D printing, which has been around for a number of years, and are touting it as the thing that will revolutionize manufacturing. Why do you think the president, Mayor Bloomberg, and the state of the city as well, our city council speaker on the show the other day, all touting 3D printing? Will it revolutionize the way we make almost anything, or revolutionize the way we make anything?
Well, I think it's very much like the personal computer, which is to say that you're absolutely right. It's not the 3D printing's been around in an industrial context for decades, but it's only just recently become personal and inexpensive and desktop. So my children today have a 3D printer, and perhaps many of your listeners have one as well. They cost as little as $1,000 and quite easy to use these days. It is a, you know, so that moment, I mean, the personal computer was not the first. first computer, but it was the first personal one. And that democratization of the technology, putting it in the hands of everybody, was what really changed the world. We're now seeing that with what's called desktop manufacturing. The 3D printer is one, laser cutters are another, 3D software called CAD, computer-aided design software, is now something you can get for free on the web. Services like Shapeways will do 3D printing for you, even if you don't have one yourself. These are all kind of consumer oriented manufacturing technologies that used to be extremely expensive and hard to use and can now be used in schools and by children. So I think that kind of that personal manufacturing movement is what's exciting all of us and the president, because it has the ability to take a formerly exclusive skill, which is designing and manufacturing things, and put them in the hands of everybody. I should mention the 3D printer is not a manufacturing technology. It's a prototyping technology. So it's a good way to make one or two of something. Ultimately, if you want to make millions of them, you would switch to another technology. But it does really lower the barrier of entry from turning an idea into a prototype that can, in fact, be manufactured.
The times that we've mentioned 3D printing on the show before, somebody always writes in or calls up to say, well, this is scary. Can't you just 3D print a gun? What can you print and what can't you print in 3D?
Well, the ones on your desktop today print in plastic or a substance called PLA, and you wouldn't make anything that was going to handle a lot of strength with that. It really is just got to get a sense of the object. You can, however, send a 3D design to a service that can print in metals, stainless steel, silver, even titanium. One of the things, technically it is possible, and people have designed parts for guns. However, things like the barrel that really handle the bullet and the explosive parts, those things require a lot of tensile strength. And one of the things about 3D printers, it lays down materials in layers, which is called an additive technology. It actually doesn't have a lot of tensile strength. It's actually sort of the worst technology you would use to create something like a barrel for a gun. You'd be better off going to the hardware store and getting some plumbing or a pipe to do that. So I think that people can get a little ahead of the technology when they think about sort of guns. And by the way, it's worth mentioning that guns are easy to get in America. You can go to Walmart and get those. I think when you project forward a few decades and you realize that someday we can 3D print biology, DNA, RNA, then you get into somewhat scarier stuff.
Of course, if they're really printing in plastic, Mayor Bloomberg might ban it. But that's another show. Last thing, does it raise concerns about intellectual property at all and copyright infringement, the 3D printing? Is it potentially bad for those makers who would like to retain control of their intellectual property? Fine for small-time makers to talk about open-source plans, but that huge corporations might be able or not to open up in the same way?
Well, it certainly raises questions about intellectual property. Copyright, for example, doesn't apply to physical things. So a lot of those battles we've been fighting over words and pictures and videos and music on the Internet, those copyright laws don't necessarily apply to 3D scans of objects. We don't know. I mean, obviously things like trademark law, does apply. And certainly patents apply, but... Mm-hmm. If you just scan something, if you use your iPhone, take out a free app called 123D Catch from Autodesk, you can scan an object.
And we have to leave it there, I'm sorry to say, with Chris Anderson. His book is Makers, the New Industrial Revolution. Chris, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Great answer. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.